Welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Color Podcast for December 4th, 2019. It's a Wednesday. It's hump day. We're halfway to the weekend. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for downloading and tuning in, telling a friend. And every time there's a problem with you downloading it, when you guys email me, I appreciate that too, even though it causes me to panic and go, what in the hell are they doing? But I appreciate that. Thank you for keeping me up to date on any and everything that you guys like about the show, hate about the show, or whatever. Probably won't change the show very much, but I'll at least be aware of it. Because once I push record, my mouth just goes and it's game on. If I could control where my mouth went, who knows where I would end up. But I can't. That's just, if it comes to my mind, it comes out of my mouth. If you want to enter to win the signed copy, a signed copy of Rich Lowry's new book, all you got to do is email Derek@dailycaller.com, D-E-R-E-K. You can spell it any way you want. Get creative in the body of the email. But in the email itself, if you want it to get to me, there might be some other weird guy at the Daily Caller with the name Derek with some wrong spelling of my name. But he might get it. Maybe he has a copy. I don't think so, but you could give it a shot. But if you want a chance to win a real one, email me and let me know. Okay, we've got a lot of ground to cover. So many Kamala, sweet, sweet Kamala. We hardly knew you, Kamala. Why'd you do it, Kamala? Oh, yes, the wheels. I mean, we saw the lug nuts falling off for months, and finally the wheel came. All wheels, all four wheels, and the spare came off of Kamala Harris's campaign. We'll get to that and the tearful goodbye that we have to wish her campaign. Also, we have the round two, or is it round three of impeachment? I don't even know what round it is anymore. I have so lost interest in impeachment in any real way. Jerry Nadler is going to hold impeachment hearings today that don't have any fact witnesses. They're not even trying. They're not even getting second and third hand information. They're bringing in people to try to convince the American people that the president should be impeached, not because of anything he did, really, but because the Constitution demands it. They're bringing in liberal constitutional scholars. And I'm not sure what you can get out of people who think that the Constitution is a series of vague suggestions and not a strict boundary for the government in which to function. But hey, when you're desperate, you do desperate things, ladies and gentlemen, and make no mistake about it. Democrats are about as desperate as you can possibly get. I suspect that their Thanksgiving break did not go as smashingly as they had hoped that it would. We have all that and more coming up on the program today. Settle in, buckle your safety belts, and all that good stuff. But first, let's talk about Life Change Tea. Joining me on the phone right now is the webmaster of GetTheTea.com, the head honcho of Life Change Tea, Ronnie McMullen. Welcome to the program, Ronnie.
How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing great, and it's in no small part thanks to your product. Tell me and tell everybody the benefits that they're missing out on by not choosing to use your product.
Life Change Tea is like a digestive aid. Now, people might think, oh, my digestion's great, but usually that's not a truth. All disease, according to Socrates, started in the gut. So when you have a digestive healthy tract, intestinal tract that's doing very well, then you start doing very well. People don't even know that in the cold and flu season, which is we're approaching that quickly, that when you have a cold or flu, your digestion slows way down and it actually can start making you constipated. So with that, Get the Tea, our super strength tea, does a wonderful job in helping things move a little better. In fact, we have the tagline, the tea that makes you go. And there's two facets to that. One, obviously, it will help you with bathroom visits. But the other thing is it will actually give you energy. So it makes you go with giving you lots of energy. And the tea tastes really great. So it's really important to do this on an ongoing basis, not just, you know, one time, you know, get a car wash and we're good to go, but all the time. So I take it every day, have for years and years, and thank God for that.
I think people need to realize, Ronnie, that health is not just about what you put into your body, but making sure your body has the ability to absorb the good things out of that. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. It helps with all of that. The website is getthetea.com. The man is Ronnie McMullen. Ronnie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And don't forget to enter the promo code Derek in the coupon code at checkout, and you get 10% off your whole order. You can't beat that deal. Promo code Derek, 10% off. 10% off. I know where you can get 10% off campaign supplies. Hell, you could probably get 90% off campaign supplies. I've been predicting it for a while now. Not that it makes me a giant soothsayer. Two lottery wins would make me a soothsayer. One lottery win would be a welcome suspicion that I'm a soothsayer. Let's start with one lottery win. Anyway, it doesn't make me a soothsayer. Nobody is a soothsayer on this one. It is the writing on the wall in our native tongue in giant letters. Kamala Harris's campaign was failing and flailing for a very, very long time. She's been shutting down offices. She'd even given up hope of winning the primary in her home state of California, the state that elected her to the United States Senate. But she put all her eggs in the Iowa basket. And just last week, she was telling everybody, oh, she's in it to win it. This is where the comeback begins. This is where it starts. And a week later, it stopped. Yes, Kamala Harris made it official. She's dropping out of the race. It's so sad. It's somebody on Twitter, one of the journalists on Twitter was like, hey, you know, all this mocking of Kamala Harris. Remember that there are a bunch of campaign staffers living in supporters' houses in Iowa who dedicated their lives to this thing. Yeah, there are 330 million Americans who dedicated their lives to the things that they do. And Kamala Harris was threatening to basically, with a magic pen, shut down many industries across the country. Fracking, offshore drilling, the firearms manufacturer, pretty much everything. Those people keeping their jobs is much more important to me than a handful of campaign volunteers having their dreams crushed. Oh, it's a sad day for them. Yeah, we've all been there. If you've ever worked on a campaign that didn't pan out, it sucks for a couple of days, but you move on because that's what you have to do. It's not your career to work on one particular presidential campaign. As far as the candidate goes, no sympathy. Kamala Harris was an awful candidate, and she also had the misfortune of being in an awful party, which looked at her entire resume with disdain and scorn. It's kind of funny. She's only been in the Senate for a couple of years. She's only been around the national stage for a couple of years. And her resume that got her elected in the state of California is already an anchor around her ankles as she tried to swim in with the big boys in the pond. She is a former prosecutor. She's a former attorney general. She was involved in law enforcement. And as we've seen in just the last 6 months, Democrats want nothing to do with law enforcement. In New York, they're running rampant every weekend, calling F the police and F this and F that. Why in the hell would anybody think that somebody in the Democratic Party would do well if they had a law enforcement background? Well, it's arrogance and ignorance, and you bite your bottom lip and you hope for the best. That's part of what politics is. But Kamala Harris bit her lip off. She made it official yesterday. She released a video on social media, and that's, of course, nothing exists unless it happens on social media. A meal you ate didn't exist unless you post a picture of it on Instagram. Don't you know that? That's not me talking. That's science. So Kamala Harris released a video on social media. It's about 4 minutes long, and she whines about this, that, and the other thing. I'm not going to bore you with the whole thing. I'm just going to play you about 45 seconds of it, because I find it amusing, really. There's no other reason. I'm a cruel, mean person, and I find it amusing. So here is Kamala Harris letting her supporter down gently.
I will remember you. 11 months ago at the launch of our campaign in Oakland, I told you all that I am not perfect, but I will always speak with decency and moral clarity and treat all people with dignity and respect, that I will lead with integrity and I will speak the truth. And so that's what I've tried to do every day of this campaign, and here's the truth today. I've taken stock and I've looked at this from every angle, and over the last few days, I have come to one of the hardest decisions of my life. So here's the deal, guys. My campaign for president simply does not have the financial resources to continue, and the financial resources we need to continue. Will you remember
me? Oh, Kamala, we hardly knew you. Of course we'll remember you. Oh, from the giant 20,000-person announcement rally that she held in Oakland, California, to sitting alone in a hotel room recording a video for social media. It was a downfall that, if it had happened in any other year, would be one of the greatest in political history, at least in this century. But she's lucky that it happened to coincide with the same year that Beto O'Rourke existed, and he holds that crown. He had so much more money, so much more glowing media attention. Don't worry, she had, don't get me wrong, she had her own glowing media attention, cheering fans, journalists fawning over her. She was the perfect intersectional candidate on paper, or so it seemed. They loved that she's a woman, and she's a woman of color. If she could have been a lesbian, she would have won in a walk, but she missed out on that just by a little bit. And she also missed out on the fact that Democrats don't want law enforcement. Her biggest problem was that she enforced the laws of the United States and of the state of California, as much as they enforce laws in California. She was actually in office when they were still enforcing laws in the state of California. And that meant that she put people that committed crimes in prison. And that is a no-no in the Democratic Party now. So she's out. She's done. She's gone. She will be missed by somebody someday. Somewhere, probably. I'm assuming. Polling data doesn't show that she will be missed, but the media will sure miss her. We have a little bit of a sob story roundtable that happened on MSNBC from Nicole Wallace. But before we get to the reaction to her dropping out, I want to play a little bit of her greatest hits, shall we? So just some clips that we've played on the show previously from Kamala Harris, from campaign events and from debate stages and whatnot, to show you just how awful of a candidate she really was. So that'll put more context on the whining and complaining and claims of racism and sexism that came from the left-wing media yesterday over it. So just in no particular order, here's the first Kamala Harris clip.
There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking. So, yes, and starting with what we can do on day one around public lands, right? And then there has to be legislation. But yes, and this is something I've taken on in California. I have a history of working on this issue. And to your point, we have to just acknowledge that the residual impact of fracking is enormous in terms of the impact on the health and safety of communities. Yeah, so thank you.
So would you ban offshore drilling?
Yes. And I've, again, worked on that.
No one found Kamala Harris as funny as Kamala Harris did. She'll ban fracking. I'll ban offshore drilling. What else you got? What do you want me to ban? I've got my banning pants on, so let's get some banning on. She really wanted to ban everything. She was not a fan of any restraints on executive authority as exercised by her, by Donald Trump. Everything that he did was an outrage, even when it was simply enforcing existing law, not passing new law, not creating new law out of whole cloth like Democrats do. She was a horrible candidate. Have I mentioned that before? Much celebrated, much ballyhooed until people got a look at her. That was a real problem. As a concept, she was wildly successful. As a candidate, not so much. And the more people saw of her, the more people paid attention to her, the less interest they had in her. We'll just play a couple more of these. I love rubbing salt in this wound because she really is not only a horrible candidate, she seems like a horrible person from a legislative standpoint. I don't know what she's like in private. She's probably very lovely, but I wouldn't trust her to tend my garden after the first frost, let alone with my liberties. So let's just pick another clip at random from Kamala Harris's greatest hits from her failed presidential campaign.
Okay, guys, you know what? America does not want to witness a food fight. They want to know how we're going to put food on their table. Yes.
That was one of her shining moments, one of her biggest applause lines of all the campaign, basically saying that we Americans just sit around desperately waiting for politicians to put food on our tables. That's it. We're nothing but a whole bunch of invalids who can't take care of ourselves or our families or our children or nothing. We need Big Brother government to come in and take care of us. That was in the first debate. That was her high point. That and attacking Joe Biden about I was one of those children who was bussed and you opposed busing. And that got her a lot of attention. Oh boy, howdy, did that get her a lot of attention. A lot of glowing press coverage. Lost in all that glowing press coverage was that she herself was in fact against busing to integrate schools. But hey, who cares about little things like semantics when you're scoring political points? Am I right? Am I right? Unfortunately, she scored more own goals than just about anybody except for Beto. Like the little soccer lingo, there's a little bone to our international listeners. Soccer still is, well, the Premier League's okay, but the rest of it you can keep. Anyway, let's go back. I could literally do this all day. I have so many Kamala Harris clips, it's funny. I think only her and Beto have generated more audio on this program just because of the sheer insanity of every time they opened their mouth. And I am really just doing a search on her name and going, I'm going to play that one next. So let's see which one I play next.
We're in a fight. This is a fight for our rule of law, for our democracy, and for our system of justice. And it's a fight we need to win. And to fight this fight, I believe we have to have the ability to not only have a nominee who can go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump, and I have taken on Jeff Sessions, I have taken on Bill Barr, I have taken on Brett Kavanaugh. I know I have the ability to do that.
That was one of her best moments, where she's talking about how she's such a fighter and she's going to fight and fight and win. And then she lists three losses. She took on Jeff Sessions, who was confirmed as Attorney General. She took on Bill Barr, who was confirmed as Attorney General. She took on Brett Kavanaugh, who was confirmed as a Supreme Court Justice. that's a hell of a record right there. Congratulations. That's like the Houston Astros next year. We took on the Washington Nationals. You lost. Okay, so that's kind of an important little bitty factoid that you left out there. And then last but not least, and I have probably an hour's worth of just Kamala Harris's greatest hits. But the last but not least, let's go back. It was, 3 weeks ago when Kamala Harris was first being asked about why her campaign wasn't doing very well. She had thoughts on the subject. You can probably remember this or at least guess as to why, and it plays right into the media's response as well.
I have also started to perhaps be more candid, talking about what I describe and what I believe to be the elephant in the room about my campaign.
What is that?
Electability.
What do you mean?
Electability. You know, essentially, is America ready for a woman and a woman of color to be president of the United States?
America was ready for a black man to be president of the United States.
And this conversation happened for him. There is a lack of ability or a difficulty in imagining that someone who we have never seen can do a job that has been done, 45 times by someone who is not that person.
Yes, the United States is just so freaking racist, and that's why Kamala Harris was tanking in the polls. Lost in all of this was the same thing that was lost in the media analysis of Kamala Harris's demise politically yesterday. Should I spoil it? No, I'm not going to spoil it. You probably picked up on it, but just in case you haven't, let's go to MSNBC. Nicole Wallace, who was supposed to be a Republican, but she turned out to be just another cable news Democrat, calling herself a Republican, over at MSNBC. She's their diversity hire. Seriously, she's the one they point to and say, see, we have liberals, and we have liberals who used to be Republicans. We've got the full spectrum. She had on a panel that included Al Sharpton, of course, because what panel would be complete without the Reverend Al Sharpton opining on everything? You know, as if the ignorance of Nicole Wallace weren't enough, you've got to throw in the ignorance, tax evasion, and racism of Al Sharpton. And don't forget the anti-Semitism. Oh, yes, don't forget that. She wanted to know why it was, well, she has an idea as to why it was that Kamala Harris did not have a... First of all, keep in mind, there were like 30 people running for the nomination for the Democratic Party, right? There was no way that all of them were going to be the nominee. There, only one of them is going to eventually be the nominee. So the idea that somebody dropping out of a field that is still somewhere near 20... has some deep, significant meaning is a testament to just how desperate the media is. People dropped out yesterday. The governor of Montana dropped out. He didn't get 1/100th of the coverage that Kamala Harris did when she announced during her campaign. I don't even think, I think he made one debate stage. And he didn't get anywhere near the amount of coverage when she dropped out. But that being said, by the way, the governor of Montana is a white guy. That being said, let's listen to Nicole Wallace opine about why it was that America did not want Kamala Harris to be president of the United States. And then there's a little bit of Al Sharpton. See, Nicole Wallace, she plays her role, white lady. And then Al Sharpton plays his role, black racist. Listen to this little mishmash.
I worked for Sarah Palin. I carefully watched and covered the campaign of Hillary Clinton. I do think that women are still held to different standards as candidates. They have to have well-run campaigns. Never mind that Donald Trump didn't have a campaign. He literally flew around with hope ironing his pants. They have to be perfect on the stump, which I never saw her stumble. Joe Biden is beloved. I'm a fan. He's never perfect on the stump. I mean, I do think there is a gender piece here that we still suck at talking about.
No, you're right. And I don't mean to cut you off. You're right.
She told the guys to shut up, all right?
Women are held to a different standard, and black women especially held to a different standard.
I agree.
Standard.
And black women, though, by the way, voted for Trump in the lowest numbers, so they can say they told us so.
Yes, it's because she's a woman and because she's a black woman. Al Sharpton chiming in there, cutting off the ladies, by the way, to say it's not just because she's a woman, it's because she's a black woman. And you can see his eyes going ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. Here come more donations to National Action Network. So that's more taxes for me to evade. It's ridiculous. Kamala Harris had absolutely glowing coverage. Now, what was the rationale for Kamala Harris? What was she bringing to the table that other candidates weren't? What was she different on? Where did she... Nowhere. The answer is nowhere. There's no point in continuing to rephrase the question. When it came to Medicare for All, I want to cover illegal aliens. Her hands went up. When it comes to getting rid of private insurance, we've got to get rid of private health insurance. And then when that was wildly unpopular with voters, she said, well, we can find some way to mix that. We don't have to get rid of private health insurance. She was literally on all sides of every single issue that you could come up with, based upon what she thought the particular room wanted at any given moment. That's kind of a problem again, and there was no overarching, this is a problem with all the Democrats, or at least 99% of them. There's, as my dad said over Thanksgiving, they're not saying why they want to be president other than they want to beat Trump. That's their whole rationale for running. Well, we've got to beat Trump. I can beat Trump. Well, how? Why should you beat Trump? Why should somebody vote for you over Donald Trump? Well, I'm not Donald Trump. Well, that was Kamala Harris's campaign slogan as well. I'm not Donald Trump. And the American people said, no, thanks. Well, surprisingly, there was a moment of sanity. Now, it devolved back in because she realized that she's on MSNBC. MSNBC contributor Elise Jordan picks up right where Sharpton and Wallace left off and kind of touches on this fact that Kamala Harris was a god-awful, terrible candidate for president. And she states that, you know, she just kind of floundered. And then at the end, she realizes, oh, yes, that's right. I'm employed by MSNBC. If I leave it here, I'm going to get fired. So she brings it back to, oh, and there's a double standard for women and for black women in particular. But for a little while here, Elise Jordan was almost accidentally speaking some truth on MSNBC about Kamala Harris.
Well, my big complaint with Kamala Harris's campaign was I didn't really understand what the message was, what was driving her. She came out of the gate and was so fantastic in that huge rally. It was so well executed and orchestrated. She looked like someone who was really going to have a top flight campaign. And then as the months went on, she never got that bump. She would have a moment like when she literally gutted Biden, but then she couldn't just take the moment and take the spoils. She had to engage in a very contentious national debate over busing, which really no one supports. And so she couldn't get that traction that she needed. And I think at the same time, she had the double-edged sword of not just being a woman, but being an African-American woman and the judgment and the standards that she had to deal with as that with that baggage.
And she brought it back home, man. Don't worry. She's still going to be employed gamefully by MSNBC because she brought it back home at the end. She got back on the talking points, but she was right there for a while. She just never really had a good justification for her candidacy other than she wanted to be president. Other than, I'm a black woman, vote for me. That's not enough. But it's almost enough. I mean, it's something in the Democratic Party, which is sad. But if you really listen to what they're saying there and what other outlets are saying, and it's kind of funny because they're talking about Democrats. They're talking about serious Democratic presidential candidates and the Democratic field over there. It is as if, well, they talk about how racist the country is constantly. Maybe they're right, but what they're really talking about is the Democrats. Maybe they should narrow their focus, because realistically, if Kamala Harris was not getting support and not getting traction because she is a black woman, she was running in the Democratic primary, not the general election. And that means that Democrats, in fact, are the horrible, horrible racist here. So maybe they're onto something. Maybe I do think that they're onto something here. But honestly, when you get down to it, all these complaints about, well, it's so tough for a black woman to get it. She's running not in the general election. This is not about the United States. This is not about America. This is about the Democratic Party. Are they all saying that Democrats are horribly racist people? Because I'd be down with that. I'd buy into that. I'd believe that. They aren't, of course. But that's not going to stop them. They're not really interested in facts. They're not really interested in much of anything. They have a narrative, and it's about how the whole country's racist, not Democrats. The whole country's sexist, not Democrats. The Los Angeles Times is very concerned, and this is just a sampling of the kind of thought that is going on in the left-wing media now. This is a news piece, not an opinion piece. The headline, Democrats Value Diversity, but the presidential field is increasingly white. Dun, dun, dun. Took two reporters to write this, Evan Halper and Janet Hook. Kamala Harris's abrupt exit from the presidential race Tuesday underscored how, in this election cycle, where Democrats have placed a particularly high value on diversity and inclusion, they are left with a slate of presidential candidates dominated by white men. Ooh. The California senator was the only black woman in the contest, and her frank talk about racial justice was a major theme for a Democratic electorate that is increasingly non-white. But that's what started out as a campaign that looked like it would reflect the diversity of America is settling into one increasingly without minority voices at the top. They're still playing this game. And Cory Booker sitting there going, hey, wait a second. What am I? And what's his face? Joaquin or Julian Castro, whichever Castro brother it is. He's a rounding error, too. He's sitting there saying, wait a second. What about me? With Harris out of the race, not a single person of color has qualified so far to be on stage when Democrats meet to debate at a national before a national audience in Los Angeles later this month. There's still time for minority candidates such as Cory Booker or entrepreneur Andrew Yang to make the stage, but even if they do, both candidates have been stuck near the bottom of the polls. They're horrible candidates. Look, Andrew Yang seems, you know, incredibly personable, but he has no real experience, and he's out there talking about, I want to give everybody $1,000 a month. I want to do this. I want to do that. We can afford to do all that. He is the stoned conversation you have while in college about politics. That's what the Andrew Yang candidacy is. Cory Booker is just boring and ridiculous, and his I am Spartacus moment during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings didn't help him at all either. But it was, I mean, they're really just sitting there going, what do the candidates look like? Well, look, you got a gay guy, you got a woman up there near the top, you've got a bunch of women still in there, but they're white, they're the wrong color. Why bother holding a primary? If this is the major focus of the party, why not just go up there and everybody state their intersectional ID? I am a black woman, I've been doubly oppressed. Well, I'm a gay man. That's only one, but I'm short, so that's one and a half. It really is to that point. I call the Democratic primary process the woke Olympics. It started off as a joke, and then they made the joke reality. By the way, it's Julian Castro who is running for president. He released a video after Harris dropped out. I want to play it for you because he's right on board. He's making a play for Kamala Harris's supporter. And if you've been paying close attention, when I've said supporter in the past, I didn't pluralize it. And I didn't pluralize it deliberately because she has no real support. She's a rounding error in the polling field. She just did not excite anybody once people started paying attention to her. Castro's the same way. Castro is out there now trying to appeal to Kamala Harris's supporter in the hopes that he can one day get outside the margin of error of zero in a poll somewhere. But Julian Castro is very, very upset that Kamala Harris dropped out. By the way, what you're about to hear is total BS.
Hey, I really want to commend Senator Harris for the race that she's run. She's one of the most qualified people running. And throughout this campaign, she has run her campaign with class and with dignity. She's articulated a vision and fought for people of all different backgrounds and people who need a champion. I think about Senator Harris as a child of immigrants, as somebody who has been fighting for an America where everybody counts. I'm a big fan of the work that she's done in the Senate and also her fight for farm workers during this campaign. I will say that the way that the media have treated Senator Harris in this campaign has been something else. In the last few days, to see articles out of Politico, the New York Times, Washington Post, that it basically trashed her campaign and focused on just one small part of it, and I think held her to a different standard, a double standard, has been grossly unfair and unfortunate. I'm glad that she's going to keep fighting in the United States Senate, and I believe that she and I share a very common vision for the future of our country. I'm glad that she's going to be fighting.
She was held to a double standard. The way that news reports focused on one narrow part of her campaign in recent weeks. Yeah, I mean, the fact that she laid off all of her staff except for like 10 people in Iowa. The fact that she closed down her offices in California, South Carolina, and New Hampshire, they focused. Why would they focus on that? That's an actual development. Why didn't they just focus on her vapid statements that contradict things she said in the past? By the way, Julian, to make it really sound sincere, you should have probably said this beforehand. You know, if you really felt, well, she's one of the most qualified people running for president, and she's wonderful, and she's got great ideas, and oh my goodness, she is awesome. Why did you wait until she dropped out to say anything nice about her? You know, that just kind of stinks of BS. And also, if you really want it to sound sincere, go inside. Do it from inside a building so you don't get the garbage truck driving in the background. Don't do it in, you know, in a way that comes off as really hasty because you're very concerned that, you know, somebody else might be, another candidate might beat you to the punch and showing remorse for Kamala Harris being drummed out of the race by bad polling and financial mismanagement and just recklessness in general. You should probably, if you really want it to be sincere, make it sincere. But you don't want it to be sincere. You don't really care. Come on. It's so funny. These people are so fake and so phony. It's such a desperate ploy to try and get some of her voters. It might work. I mean, they're that desperate. Speaking of desperate, before we get to this latest impeachment crap, I want to point out something that I just saw on Vox. It was just published yesterday morning. And it gives you an insight into some of the minds of the people running for president and how kind of totalitarian they are. This is Vox News, which is, it was founded by the people who brought you the Daily Kos. So that lets you know where they're coming from. But it's treated miraculously as a legitimate news source, even though it is run exclusively by lefties for lefties. It's kind of funny, but everybody in the mainstream media just pretends that, well, Vox is a very serious place. It's not. But they get access to the Democratic candidates because Vox has a big news or a big audience. And they ask them, and here's the question that they put to the candidates, quote, how should platforms be held responsible for misinformation or hate speech on their sites? This is big news, of course, because as we talked about before, the pressure being put on Facebook by Gayle King, Oprah's friend, and a whole bunch of really every left-wing outlet to basically block ads from the Trump campaign. So they want to get everybody on record as being super duper woke and be the anti-Trumpist. They're nuts, these people. So here's how Bernie Sanders answered the question, how platforms should be held responsible for misinformation and hate speech. Now, keep in mind, misinformation and hate speech is what they're asking about. And we have a First Amendment in this country, but they're asking our government leaders, or would-be potential government leaders, God forbid, this question. And this is how Bernie Sanders responded, quote, well, I believe that tech giants and online platforms should not be shielded from responsibility when they knowingly allow content on their platforms that promotes and facilitates violence. See, because to the left, words they don't like are violence. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may also break my bones. Section 230 was written well before the current era of online communities, expression, and technological development. So I will work with the experts and advocates to ensure that these large profitable corporations are held responsible when dangerous activity occurs on their watch, while protecting the fundamental right of free speech in this country. This is kind of funny because he says this all in one sentence. While protecting the fundamental right of free speech in this country and making sure that right-wing groups don't abuse regulations to advance their agenda. Now, everybody, the other side of Mao, is a right-winger to Bernie Sanders. And he's going to protect the fundamental right of free speech in this country and make sure that right-wing groups don't say stuff. He's a totalitarian. All the things that the Democrats run around and go, oh my God, Donald Trump is a would-be totalitarian. He's a dictator in training. We are so, our democracy is under threat by Donald Trump tweeting mean things about journalists. Here's Bernie Sanders on record saying, I support free speech, just not for people who disagree with me. And there are crickets going on. Elizabeth Warren's answer, I condemn hate speech, and I believe we should be able to hold people accountable for their words. Again, a totalitarian instinct. You must be punished for what you say. Forget what you do. You didn't do anything. It doesn't matter. You said stuff, and we've deemed what you said to be unacceptable. I also support the idea of the American people's right to free speech. Oh, so she supports the American people's right to free speech? Isn't that sweet? Which is critical to our democracy. But the First Amendment does not protect violence that accompanies speech. What? Okay. So is she coming out against Antifa? Is she coming out against every left-wing nut job who sets a Starbucks on fire because a conservative is giving a speech somewhere on their college campus? No, that's not what she's talking about. When white supremacists and bigots murder, attack, or attempt to harm others, they should be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. Yes, absolutely. When anybody murders or attacks or attempts to harm others, they should be held accountable. Why? Not just white supremacists. What a crazy idea, Elizabeth Warren. Or are you just suggesting a separate but equal justice system? It's unclear. Today, the same technological changes that have allowed people to more easily find each other and unite have also made it easier to incite hatred and violence, a change that our current leadership continues to exploit. Big tech companies cannot continue to hide behind free speech while profiting off hate speech and disinformation campaigns. Now she's equating what the left determines to be a politically inaccurate ad with hate speech, which is, of course, BS in and of itself. That's why I've called out Facebook for operating as a disinformation for profit machine, and why I'm committed to unwinding Facebook's anti-competitive mergers and cracking down on practices that allow the company to undermine our democracy. Facebook ultimately enables people to communicate with people. I am in touch with more people from high school than I was ever really even in touch with while in high school, to be perfectly honest with you. And that is a threat to our democracy, us talking about our personal beliefs, having discussions and debates that you might not like, Elizabeth Warren. But don't worry, it's Donald Trump who is the totalitarian, don't you know? Mayor Pete... Well, he's not going to be left behind. Mayor Pete says, the El Paso shooting, following on so many others, has highlighted the role of online platforms in spreading hate. We must demand more from our platforms. My administration will identify online platforms and other companies that refuse to take steps to curb use by hate groups. And again, hate groups are any group that Pete disagrees with. Pro-life groups, for example, are a hate group to Mayor Pete. Sites that traffic in hate and encourage or fail to moderate abuse and hate should be called out as facilitating socially harmful speech. One of the leading Democratic candidates for president of the United States is calling for calling out websites that facilitate socially harmful speech. In addition, my administration will engage with social media and other online platforms to advance new tools and best practices. Now, this is where it gets really, really dicey. His administration, meaning if he is president of the United States, which means the government of the United States will be involving itself in free speech issues and working with tech companies. Oh, we're just going to work with them. Yes, when the government works with you, it's basically like from The Godfather. You know, here's the contract, here's a gun. Either your signature or your brains are going to be on the contract. You get to pick. Government doesn't work with people to try and find guidelines. Government comes in with what it wants and says, we have the power to regulate and tax you out of existence. Do you like existing? If you like existing, give us what we want. And again, Donald Trump tweeting mean things about CNN is the true threat to our democracy. So including appropriate terms of service for limiting the spread of hateful ideology and targeted harassment of others. We must treat ads on platforms with the same degree of accountability as TV and radio ads. My administration will push for new public-private partnerships and provide greater federal funding to develop tools that identify malicious actors and behaviors online, including things like the use of false identities, problematic uses of bots, and extremist behavior. Again, Mayor Pete, if you are pro-life, Mayor Pete considers you an extremist. And if you were to happen to write something that is vocally pro-life on your Facebook page, you would be in violation of Pete Buttigieg's government terms of service. Pete keeps digging. Bernie and Elizabeth at least kept theirs short, but Pete is out there still rambling. He continues, false political advertising has no place in our democracy, whether on the airwaves or online, and should be removed. Again, the government, a candidate for president, advocating for the silencing of things that he deems to be false. For too long, we have exempted digital ads from important political advertising rules that apply to broadcast media and radio because they are not political ads broadcast anywhere. Online is very narrowcast. Podcasts, people always say, oh, I'm a broadcaster. You're not a broadcaster. You're a narrowcaster if you're a podcaster. You're not available everywhere. People have to seek you out and download you. It's very narrow. The reason that TV and radio are regulated by the Federal Communications Commission is because they are broadcast over the public airwaves. It's why FCC regulations don't apply to cable channels. That's why It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia can drop S-bombs all over the place. That's why South Park can get away with the language they want. They are not licensing public airwaves. The government has nothing to do with it. And the same goes for online, by the way. This is built up by, I have Fios. Fios built the fiber optic network in my neighborhood through which I connect to the internet. The federal government didn't do that. Verizon did that. But here's Pete basically saying, well, I want to pretend that we own that too, collective ownership, and therefore we can regulate the hell out of them. It's incredibly dangerous. It goes on from there, but I'm not going to read the whole Pete Buttigieg thing. I want to get to one more candidate. Michael Bennett also, Colorado senator. It's so sad that he's even pretending that Vox kind of threw him a bone and said, well, what do you think? They probably put out feelers to all the campaigns. And Bennett thought, ooh, somebody's paying attention and asking a question. Let's give him a statement. But no, we don't care. Tom Steyer, the billionaire, totalitarian again. A big problem here is that social media companies are not living up to their own terms of service. If Facebook and Twitter are going to restore the public's trust, then they should take swift action to make sure that hate groups do not find a home on their websites and misinformation campaigns are not spread throughout their platforms. Misinformation campaigns, again, are things that Democrats disagree with, despite evidence to the contrary. And hate is anybody who isn't a leftist. But remember, it's Donald Trump's tweets that are a true threat to our democracy. It's Donald Trump's tweets that are a true threat to the First Amendment. Yet here you have some of the rest of them apparently did not respond, but like Joe Biden. Joe Biden probably doesn't know that what email is, so he couldn't respond. But here you have leading Democratic candidates essentially saying, I want to use the power of government to silence people with whom I disagree and people who say things I don't like and my political enemies. And I want to use the power of government to threaten companies, private companies, in order to get them to impose my will on their customers. But again, it's Donald Trump who's the threat to democracy, not these totalitarian little Hitlers in training. Speaking of totalitarian Hitlers in training, I want to talk for, since I went on for a lot longer than I planned on the other topics, I'm going to touch on the hearing today. This is obviously being recorded long before the hearing, the latest impeachment hearing. This one actually held where impeachment hearings should be held, in the House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Jerry Nadler. Jerry Nadler has a long history with Donald Trump going back to when Donald Trump was a Democrat. They fought over all sorts of things in New York City, fought publicly, fought privately. So Jerry Nadler has a bone to pick with President Trump. That's just how it is. It's just the reality. You can look it up for yourself. But the hearing today, you would think, well, who's going to be the witnesses? Who are they going to call? Are they going to get John Bolton out there? Are they going, who's going to testify? What new bombshell will come out of this hearing? Well, let me dispel any rumor or thought that you have along those lines right now. There will be zero revelations out of this hearing, because there are zero witnesses with not only no firsthand information, they won't have any firsthand information, they won't have any secondhand information, they won't have any thirdhand information. In fact, they won't have any information at all. These witnesses are all liberal lawyers, liberal professors, liberal law school professors, to be more succinct. These are experts. Democrats chose three of them. Republicans chose one. Republicans chose Jonathan Turley, who is a law professor at Georgetown, and you've seen him all over television. He's also a liberal and a registered Democrat. He will be up there as the Republican witness. But the questions that they will be asking, that Democrats will be asking anyway, will be incredibly condescending to you and every other American. The point of this hearing is because Jerry Nadler and the Democrats and Adam Schiff have all failed miserably when it came to the impeachment hearings last time. The American people are not on board with impeaching and removing Donald Trump. In fact, more Americans oppose removing Donald Trump now, after 2 weeks of this sham hearing, than did beforehand. So Democrats are desperate. Jerry Nadler needs to keep the ball rolling. They need to be seen as, well, they need to be moving this forward, because they're telling us, the public, that this is so important, that Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy, a threat to our country, a threat to our national security, that he must be removed. But they don't really want to take that vote because it's not popular with the American public. So they're trying to convince the American public that it should be popular. So they're putting on this really show trial to try and convince people that what Donald Trump is alleged to have done is a high crime and or misdemeanor worthy of removal from office. That's why they're bringing up law professors and not actual witnesses. You're going to see and hear the equivalent of a series of op-eds today. That's all it is. Academic papers, the verbal form. It's like the world's worst audiobook. You know where they're going to fall. All of these people have been pre-screened. The answers will be canned. Maybe in cross-examination, you'll get some interesting tidbit or acquiescence of a different thought process than they originally testified to, but it seems highly unlikely. This is a show. Democrats are desperate. Now there are reports coming out of Congress that while they wanted to have this originally done before Thanksgiving, remember? Oh, this should be relatively quick. It's pretty easy. It's a tap and putt. Now they're talking about Christmas. And now there's talk that it'll be after the new year. Now, why would it be after the new year? Well, according to reports, particularly from Chad Pergram from Fox News, who I know a little bit, is friends with my wife, good dude, been working up on Capitol Hill for a very, very long time, knows how the place works better than most people. According to Chad Pergram, someone in Democratic leadership told him that impeachment at Christmas isn't very good. It isn't very Christmassy. It isn't in keeping in the holiday spirit. So they're looking to keep it away from Christmas and move it into the new year. They also have to make sure that the government doesn't shut down, so they have to pass a continuing resolution. And there's growing pressure on Nancy Pelosi to pass the USMCA, the new trade agreement with Canada and Mexico. Now, if all of that is true, there's a very interesting question I would like to ask these people, and I think everybody should have a very similar question to this. If you're waiting because there aren't enough legislative days in the calendar, what with the vacations for the holidays and what have you, before Christmas to get this done, that you need to push it back because it's in keeping with the Christmas spirit as well, how can you say, as Democrats do repeatedly, that Donald Trump is a threat to our country and has so abused his office that he is threatening the very foundation of our democracy? If Donald Trump is doing that, if you really believe that, why wouldn't you forego Christmas vacation? Why wouldn't you forego the back-breaking 3-day work week that you've pioneered and maybe stick here through some weekends? There's nothing preventing Congress from working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week until they get something done. The only thing that stops them from doing it is the will to do it. But if we're to believe what they're telling us, that what Donald Trump is alleged to have done is such a danger to the very fabric of our country, should they not get a whole bunch of no-dos and Vivarin and caffeine pills and, hell, given how some of them really are in private life, a bunch of cocaine and stay awake until they get this duty done? If they truly, really, honestly believe that the President of the United States is such a threat to the stability and future of the United States, why aren't they working tirelessly on this to get it done? Why wouldn't they move as quickly as possible? If they think they have the evidence, if their curiosity and their bar is already met, what are they waiting for? Well, they're waiting for the polls. They want to try and nudge the polls yet again, which again is what today is all about. It's all a show. It's all a sham. The American people aren't buying it. The American people aren't biting. Democrats are dangling in the wind. They're starting to get nervous. And they realize that if they do this at all, it's going to be really bad, so they're desperate to try and find a little more time. Just give us a little more time. Please, we can convince the American people that Donald Trump is a monster and must be removed. All we need is some more time. And they're giving it. They're like begging a loan shark. Don't break my legs today. Please, I'll get you the money, brother. Weekend, I promise. I just need a little more time. My luck's going to change. Cover me on this next bet and we'll be good. It's pathetic. It's so transparent. If they had it, if they really believed what they said, that Donald Trump is this massive threat to our very existence, an existential threat, which dictionary.com declared to be the word of the year, existential. If he really is this existential threat that warrants the overturning of the 2016 election in the name of our republic, why not work this weekend? Why not work next weekend? Why not, even if you don't want to work on the weekends, how about you work a Friday and a Monday? Because you don't even do that. Because it's all a sham. It's all a fraud. We're being hoodwinked, ladies and gentlemen. The media is going along with it breathlessly. but it's all a total and complete and utter fraud. Just remember that as you watch the hearings today or see clips of the hearings tonight. That is all the time we have. We'll have all the highlights or lowlights or whatever you want to call it from the hearings tomorrow and everything else that happens between then and now. If you want to enter to win the signed copy of Rich Lowry's book, there'll be two of them I'll be giving away. Email Derek@dailycaller.com if you'd like to help support the program in any way, shape, or form. The website is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Not a necessity, but a very nice thing, because you're all very nice people, and listening really is enough. And I thank you for that. I will see you tomorrow.
My campaign for president simply does not have the financial resources to continue.